Welcome to Ready to be Romanced. I'm Tori.
And I'm Megan.
And today we're discussing
A Court of Frost and Starlight. You are incapable of saying a title without a giggle. I love it. It's your signature thing now.
It truly is. Surprise, we're back. Because, okay, so like this is what happened is I was so down on Akawar that I was going on vacation and I was like, I feel like I could read like one or two books on this trip. And I was like, I'm gonna read Akafas. And it took me literally one plane ride and a ferry. So like 4 hours, which I could have probably read it faster. Absolutely brutal book.
Brutal Flames is the like unhinged FaceTime call that I got from you being like,
oh my God, I forgot.
Like, we need to talk about these books right now. And I'm like, we shouldn't save it for the podcast. No, I'm ready. Let's talk about it.
I forgot about that.
What do you mean brutal? Okay, lay it on me.
The thing is this is really smart in terms of like, it is kind of a trilogy moving into a new aspect of this series, because we know the POV switches from Feyre and Rhysand to other couples. So it makes so much sense to write a novella. I just thought in almost 300 pages, we could get a little more intrigue. It's not fun just like watching people or like watching, listening, experiencing people go shopping.
We did not talk about this. No. SJM gave us the Christmas sitcom episode of Akatar series, and I am living for it. Here's the perspective I will bring, which is that I reread this. I've only read it once. I now reread it over yesterday and today to record this episode. And the first time I read it, I remember being like, ? Like the gif of the woman with all the math going across her face being like, I don't understand. Like, what is this? Why is this? What is the point of this? So I hear you. And on the reread yesterday, today, when I had literally forgot everything that happened and reread it, I was giddy at having just like,
I know, fun stuff. It's so funny how hypocritical I am, where it's like, I was like, Akawar, too much war, not enough sex, not enough funny bits. And then this is just sex and funny bits. And I was like, actually, bring back the war. No, it wasn't even that, though. I had a good time reading it. Again, read it in like two sittings over like a day on transportation. I had a great time. I was also like laughing and stuff like that. But I just, and it plants a lot of good seeds. Plants a lot of good seeds. But I don't know. I just wanted more like events or something. I don't know.
I did like gloss over, I'm not going to lie, most of Feyre's internal
Feyre rambling. Insufferable. I stand Feyre. Actually, I don't know. I feel like I say that, but it's like if you looked back at all the episodes we've covered on this godforsaken series, I probably sound like Feyre. I call her a dumb bitch, I feel like, every, like, 2 minutes. But, like, in general, I do like her as a character. Like, I like her bravery and her courage, and she's, like, smart and stuff like that. But, man, oh, man, your life fucking sucks, girly. Like, she just can't even spend a dollar without complaining about something.
Yeah, it's all these, like, big life lessons, and she is contemplating the meaning of life every 2 seconds, and I'm like, take a breath. You hit the jackpot. You won the lottery with a hot bat boy and like 18 houses at this point, okay? You own like 30 properties across multiple continents. You're fine. No, it's like, I'll take her spot if she wants to keep complaining.
No, literally. I'm just jealous. That's what this all stems from.
We're just jealous bitches.
Totally. Okay, so we're going to be talking about A Court of Frost and Starlight. So spoilers ahead, this book is written by Sarah J. Maas. It was published May 1st, 2018. And we pick up after the battle with Highburn has concluded, it's 1 week away from winter solstice slash Feyre's birthday, and everyone's in Night Court kind of dealing with, you know, the ramifications after the war.
They're really, like, worried about what presents to get each other for Akatar Christmas.
No, literally. And again, love it, because it's like, it is fun seeing. I wrote down all the gifts so we can talk about, yeah, who got what, because I think that that's fun and it shows like more of their personality and how they think and stuff like that. Like, I think it's hilarious that Moore gets like really awful gifts and stuff like that. Like, that's funny. That's a cute little thing. But it's like, did we need that over six chapters or whatever? It's like, no, it could have been really truly one. But
well, you can say the whole plot in the next 2 minutes of this, so I'll use.
Shop, shop, shop. Grape, grape, grape.
Ooh, the Illyrian war camps might have an upsurgence. Are you surgeons? Bye.
Yeah, brew, brew, brew. Plot, plot, plot. Yes. Okay, so Rhys is upset at Devlin because, who's like one of the war generals in the Illyrian camps, because he's not letting the females train. Cassian and Rhys have talked about the discrepancy between females and males in like the Lyrian
war camp
species or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah. Because they're like supposed to be at home with the kids and setting everything up for winter solstice. So they were like not getting enough training hours, and obviously they're upset. They talk through this entire book, and I feel like even series, about how they're trying to make change in the Lyrian war camps, but it takes time.
Snore.
Yeah. Yeah, the feminist. Like, okay, recent, our feminist king, like.
And it's just the most unnuanced,
basic bitch Barbie movie ass explanation of women's sexism rights. And women's rights, literally.
Yeah,
it's so funny. So we check in with Nesta, and she's not speaking with Cassian right now. She's moved into an apartment in quote-unquote slums and refuses to interact with anyone in the inner circle except for Amrim. And like, she does a little bit with Feyre and Elaine, but like very minimal. Feyre is excited but nervous to spend winter solstice in Night Court. It's her first one. The last one, she was still in Spring Court. She is searching for gifts to give her friends. And while she's doing that, she meets Resna?
Couldn't beat me. Give me a dollar for every time we mispronounce the name of someone in this series.
She meets Resna. ? At an art studio in the Rainbow District. And, you know, she's very thankful for Feyre. And she's like, I heard you were a painter. There's an empty gallery, like, across the street from my studio. And the family, like, deserted it. They escaped before the war. Come down here to paint or do something with this empty space. And she is just...
I couldn't possibly... I couldn't. I just, that would just be
too much. Okay, Feyre.
Get a grip.
Get a fucking grip. It's like basically what happened in Spring Court all over again, where she can't paint. So that night, Moore, Rhys, and Feyre have to go to Hewn City. It's part of the tradition of solstice. We also hear at this time, because it's like a week, again, like I said, a week away from solstice. So they have like a week of festivities that where they're always like going out to eat and having get-togethers. And it's tradition for them to go to Hewn City every solstice. And again, we, like, this is so annoying. We hear at this time where, like, Feyre and Rhysen hold weekly, like, open sessions where citizens of Valaris can go tell them their gripes and grumbles. And they'll, like, solve them and stuff like that. And it's so funny because she's also, like, volunteering at, like, I think kind of like a shelter. And they're literally like, one of them like locks her out of the shelter and they're like, fucking go home to your family and friends. We don't need you here anymore.
Which is really funny if you think about this whole underlying thing where Feyre is actually just like the most embarrassing person ever. And it's really funny because, of course, in the books, it's like, I'm so guilty. I have to help all the people. I have to be going to every shelter. I like just couldn't possibly do anything for myself. Like, I just feel like that's not right after the war and everything seems so bad. And it's really funny. And then, yeah, then you read it as if they're supposed to be like, no, you've already done so much for us. Like, you should also go enjoy your time at this like holiday with your family. But it's really funny to read it as like, she's so embarrassing and useless that everybody is literally like, No, leave. And you couldn't possibly help us anymore. And they're like, oh my God, get her out of here.
It does kind of seem like that. Like, she's just like imposing on the city a little bit. But it also gives like Princess Di vibes for sure. Like, yeah, it's just, it is funny. I'm actually curious from the listeners. So please weigh in. But it's like, did anybody read this and not think it was like cheesy? I'm curious if like people were just like, oh no, like that's my girl. Like,
that's who I want to be and aspire to be.
They go to Hewn City and obviously tensions are always high there because Moore's father and Aerys is there because Aerys and Kyr have some type of working relationship. Aerys wants to gain more territory from Autumn Court and Feyre and Rhysand are like, absolutely not. Aerys is like, okay, well, like, I guess if anybody wanted to expand their territories, they would have to, you know, go through Spring Court. So they would have to loop in Tamlin. And so Rhys and Feyre are like, oh, gotta check in on old Tam Tam.
Old Tam Tam. Let's go check on the guy. Well, and Rhysand is like, I'll go, like, he asks Feyre, right, if she like wants to be a part of that conversation, because they need to know if Tamlin's gonna like protect the human border now that the wall is down, and what about expansion. And I think she's like, no, I'm good, which I like for her. Like, I am,
that's fair. Yeah.
I am glad that she's just like, that's none of my business, actually. I don't give a shit about, like, you
super
go
healthy,
you go do that, that's fine. No, actually it is, actually it, yeah, really, it, yeah, really, yeah, yeah, is. So and then I like that he's like, yeah, of course, like, no problem, like I'll just go and do that. Like,
that's a good ally. That's what we want to see. Recent.
Yeah, exactly. I love that.
Get, before he goes to Spring Court, we see Feyre, you know, getting the courage to go to Rosina's studio to paint. But as soon as she gets there and looks inside the window, she's like, no, can't do it. So she ends up in the abandoned gallery and she paints there instead. And she paints how she looked in the Ouroboros mirror.
I can't even. I'm like looking at Tori. Like, I cannot. You know what? Therapy. Good for you.
Art therapy. Huge. Okay. Is it just me? Because I, again, am here for the vibes and not really the lore. But like, when she sees herself as this like creature or whatever, what is really bad about that? Is it saying that she's like, has this dark inside? Because it's like, yeah, but like, isn't that what Rhys likes and like Night Court is all about and stuff? Like, what good is
good fucking question. Good fucking question. It's like, yes, I'm a complex human being who has dark sides and light sides. That's what I saw in the mirror and I accepted it.
Yeah, literally.
Basic Feyre, basic. It's fine.
So Rhys pays Tamlin a visit and Spring Court is unwell. No one's there. They've abandoned him. No one's guarding the borders because people don't want to work for Tamlin. And he is living in like a abandoned estate.
It's just interesting. Like, because I guess there was all this stuff going on in the war and then he kind of had this redeeming moment in Akawar, or at least this like good moment where he helped, like pivotally helped them escape when Highburn kidnapped Elaine, and then also came through to help in the final war and battle, and then helped revive Rhysand from
death.
From death. And then, yeah, he's just kind of like he's in his depresso mode. I just don't think that he knows what to do now. And yeah, Feyre destroyed his court from the inside out before she left at the beginning of Ekwar. So I just have questions. My wonder whys are like, isn't the spring like who is ruling over the entirety of the spring court though? Like, there aren't there villages of like people long? I know it's not like a big
I
city, but
know.
I'm just like, didn't probably a lot of people live on this estate and the servants and like just around? Like, I'm just like, all right, I guess maybe it's just that everybody's abandoned the estate particularly, and maybe people have moved away since Highburn's forces were there. I don't know.
Yeah, and Rhys offers to help him, but again, it's like, why would you want to, no offense, but like get help from such a smug, like a smug frenemy, basically.
Yeah, it's like who each both had a hand in killing each other's like families.
Family,
Yeah,
totally.
yeah.
So Tamlin's like, no, I wouldn't want like your people on my lands. And then he's like, hey, like, well, fuck you. You deserve all of this. Like, this is all your fault. Goodbye.
Yeah, it's so funny. Okay, so you know that, and I've talked a bit about it. I'm like a fan fiction girly. I love different ships of different characters and stuff. And I'm just thinking, like, there's just absolutely nothing, like, they are true enemies. And I love enemies to lovers, and I love me some slouch fan fiction. And there's just like, there's not even like good chemistry between them. Like,
No,
there's nothing.
it's
They
truly
literally,
just bad.
yeah, they really just hate each other. And I'm like, okay, like, I get it. Get out of, yeah, just funny.
Totally, totally. Do you feel bad for Tamlin at this point?
No.
I don't either, but I do kind of see maybe a possible redemption arc coming from him
I've read a
in
bunch.
the long haul.
Yeah, I've read a bunch about this online. Like, people have a lot of theories, and I think that there's like a lot of camps of like not pro Tamlin, but like whether or not like justifying all the stuff that he went through. And I just like don't care. I'm like, okay, whatever. It's
Yeah,
fictional characters.
he's the least interesting.
And he's least interesting. So would I be up? I like when an author can take something in an unexpected direction. So like we talked about how bored we were with Elaine. I know everybody's like, oh, an Elaine book or whatever. If the next book in the series is like Elaine somehow in the Spring Court and there's an interesting storyline with Tamlin there, I'm here for it because it's not what I would have expected. And if it's literally just like Elaine being like, okay, thinks that I like Asriel or whatever, I'd be like, ah, I'm so
I could see
bored.
that though, like maybe Lucien patches things up with Tamlin and then Lucien and Elaine eventually get together and then move to Spring Court where she can guard in all the time.
Justice for Lucien. I need him to like find a different court. Find not the Night Court, not the Spring Court, not the Autumn Court. I don't know. He's like, while we learn about his like new BFFs, Vasa and
Yeah, the
Jurian.
Band of
Oh
Exiles.
my God, I cannot with the name. I cannot. They're like about to open a rock band. Like,
Get your fiddle out. Like, that's so fucking funny. Rhys winnows back to Night Court and he's like, fuck Feyre, like I was trying to take the higher road and then he like baited me and then I like absolutely just sunk to like the lowest levels and he's really disappointed in himself. And she's like, hey, everyone's allowed a slip up after Winter Solstice, like go and patch things up with him.
do you know, as much as I like would love to complain about like sometimes how, well, a lot of times how cringy Feyre is, and also Rhysand is just like, oh, you know, there's lots of problems with Rhysand. I'm actually obsessed with their relationship, even though it's like boring. There actually are these moments, right, where she's like, yeah, everybody just makes mistakes, or like they have these.
No, they're so good together. I really like them.
Yeah, they're really good together. No,
Except
I
for when they're like righteous and annoying. It's like I feel like we get that. No SF spoilers here, but like I feel like we definitely get that in that second book. Even here, a little bit.
them to other people, them on their own. If it's just them that I'm like, okay, like I'll like
Obsessed.
read about this and I'm obsessed with it. Yeah, and I feel like we would be remiss to talk about, and maybe you already have this because I think you texted me about it, because very early in like the first chapter, when Rhysand is talking to Cassian in the camp, you know exactly what I'm gonna say, and he's like, "Fuck, Cassian, she's 21. She's turning 21." Like, he's like having a bro conversation, like a locker room conversation, but he's just like, "I'm a terrible human." And Cassian is so fast in boy nature to be like, "No, bro, it's fine because you love each other so much." And I like, how great would it have been if he was just like, "Yeah, you fucking weirdo. She's 21 years old and you're 7,000 years old."
100%. Especially because it doesn't seem like it has the like arrested development thing that Twilight and stuff does. It's truly like you are just fucking an ancient being.
I just don't know why I'm surprised to put that in. Like,
Me too.
It's kind of funny that I'm just like, I guess she's just absolutely owning it, that she has this like insane age gap that she's playing with. But I just thought it was really funny. I didn't remember them like actually breaking the fourth wall and talking about it, kind of being like, she's 21, and that he's like kind of broken up about that, which she's like never really been broken up about that ever
before. But maybe faced with her birthday, it's because it's her 21st birthday, so technically she's 20 at this point. And they met, she would have been 19 at the time. But it's like, yeah, I guess it's like he's faced with the fact that she's 21. I just like don't get how you could. I guess she's just not written as a 21-year-old. Like, that. That's, let's just put it blankly. She looks like a 21-year-old, but she acts like she's like
they're
35
both,
or whatever.
Yeah, like they're both at like just adult age. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah,
but I hate that about fantasy books, that it's just like, oh, we'll make them fucking 19 because that's when you're like youthful and gorgeous, and anyone else, and like you
like,
are
sorry,
fertile.
You still have pimples on your face. Like, fuck, yeah, Christ.
You can't drink legally.
Fairy wine can go to anybody, apparently. Fairy wine doesn't have a legal drinking age. Actually, speaking of wine, they have a lot of, we get some really fun inner circle banter
moments.
This is probably my favorite part, and this is what I like really enjoyed reading, being like obsessed with these characters. It did feel like I got this like sitcom episode, or like this little like fan fiction coda, where I just like get to explore these moments that of course would never make it into a book that was trying to move the plot forward, because they would those scenes would just be cut because they're not like moving anything forward. But I love when Feyre and Cassian are like getting drunk off of like Rhysand's good wine, and they're trying to decorate, and they like half-heartedly like decorate terribly. Like, isn't she an artist? Shouldn't she like know how to decorate? And then Azriel comes in and like just doesn't even say anything and just starts straightening things. Like, I can see it,
like fixing it.
Yeah,
clearly in my head
with the laugh track going in the audience. Like, it's just really cute. It's really cute.
This was my favorite scene, I think, in the entire book, just because it's such a friend moment. Like, it seems so human and so realistic that they would start putting up the decorations and then just like get drunk. And I love, I don't know if it's in this scene particular, but Cassian's like, "Where does Reese hide the good wine?" or whatever.
He called him Reese a couple times, and we really get some good Cassian stuff, which again kind of makes sense. They're like, she's planting seeds for what characters we might explore in the next book. And it's just, yeah, it's so funny. He's such a little, it's like there's this scene where they're sitting down for like solstice dinner, and Cassian's got like food like falling out of his mouth, and he's like Joey from Friends, and he's like, why would we wait? And Asriel's like, wait
till everyone sits down at the table, because Elaine goes up to like get a glass of wine or something like that for someone,
which is, they're like really building, exactly, and they're building up. I'm such a simp for Asriel, and it's because we're not getting very much about him, but anytime we do, it's like just hinting at this like traumatic past, and he's just like so tall and brooding, and there's so much depth to him, but we just don't know it, which is why I'm terrified for when we do find out more about him, because I'm going to be like, oh, okay.
Sure. Yeah, no, I cannot wait for that. They have put up the decorations. Elaine is cooking with the girlies and stuff like that. And they're hoping that Nesta joins them for this pre-solstice get together. And Elaine's like, oh yeah, by the way, I saw Nesta and she doesn't want to see you or anyone else ever again.
Again, explicitly, she's like, yeah, I just don't. And Fervor's like, what do you mean? And she's like, yeah, no, she just is like, fuck you, never again, doesn't want to see us, doesn't want to be any part of this. And Fervor's like, well, that, like, won't do. Like, I'll talk to her. And Elaine's like, actually, we get a little bit of, like, sass from Elaine for the first time. Because we're, like, getting hints that she's kind of been healing a little bit. And she's, like, gained weight back from being so gaunt. And she hasn't had any, like, seer visions lately. And she's, like, doing a little bit better since the war, I guess. And yeah, she's just like, no, like, don't bother. Like,
which is, like, what is Nesta's prob at this point? Like, obviously, it's just, like, the trauma from the war. But what is it about them? Is it just that they are a family and are seemingly on the outside doing well that annoys her? Because that would annoy me, trust me. Like, I'm on Nesta's side here. Like, don't get me wrong. But, like, is there anything specifically also?
It's interesting, right? Like, it's, like, it's a good, like, people deal with things really differently, even with the same upbringing. Like, I think you actually, like, see that in siblings a lot. It's interesting when you're like, why am I so different from my sibling? And we have such different views of the world when we've been brought up this, like, in the same circumstances by the same parents. Like, Nesta, though, was always, it seemed like a crab apple. It's not like, it was just, like, she was like this prior to when they were in poverty and when they were humans and when they were this. And so I don't know why it's hitting her in this particular way, but she's obviously processing and going through something in a very different way than the rest of them, and like doesn't have the same connections
that can pull her out of it. Like Feyre had Rhys and Elaine has Feyre, and Nesta's just never felt this connection to Feyre.
Well, and Elaine was like had a partner, had like a betrothed in the human world, and she had somebody that she like her makes sense why she is depressed
and technically a mate now that, you know, if she was open to it could tap into.
No, I think it's a good question, and I think we're still just like, oh, why is she so bad? But then we talk about it, but you get like I don't know, 3 pages from her perspective or like what's going on with her at the end. And she's obviously like super traumatized. But yeah, Feyre had like Elaine's like, I don't want her, or she's not going to come. And Feyre really wants her there. And
they go track her down.
Yeah, they track her down in like this city. It's like so funny. It's like this beautiful city that has no issues, but somehow she has found the slummiest place to live and the seediest of all seediest of taverns to go to.
No, I literally can't with this. This is my biggest gripe and grumble. It's like you have just talked about how special Velaris is, which doesn't mean that like
There can't be
seedy pubs, because what were they really doing? Gambling, hooking up, and drinking? Like, that doesn't sound too bad to me. But, like, stop describing her fucking neighborhood as a slum if you are the king and queen of this city. It's like, then fix it if it's, like, not well. Use your fucking millions of dollars or marks or whatever to fix the apartment, the complex that she lives in. Like, Case closed.
Good thing just put Tori on the case. No problem. No,
literally. I always do this, and it's like, and then I have to remind myself, it's like, well, Bray, then you wouldn't have a book if all these things were just solved like you think they should be solved. It's like, then there's no intrigue because so the funny. Book is just, yeah. Anyways, they track her down, and she's like, can you please come to Winter Solstice? And she's like, no. And then Feyre pulls the dad card and says, well, our dad would have wanted us together. And she's like, oh, actually, fuck this. Fuck you. She's like, I want you to leave. And then Nesta's like, okay, also, by the way, my rent is due.
This
will be due. January 1st, baby. Like,
no.
Gotta pay the landlord. And she goes, if you come to Winter Solstice, I will pay your rent.
Yeah, I feel like that was, like, the cringiest moment. I, like, want to be like sympathetic to what Nessa's going through and like figure it out. And then she's just like, yeah, my rent's due. I'm like, you're not entitled. I don't know. Yeah, are you entitled to their money and want to have nothing to do with them? Is there like any conversation going on about this? I don't know.
That's a good question.
It's just interesting.
Okay, like for example, it's like, what is she supposed to do? Get a job? She has no skills because she was just going to get married off in the mortal lands.
Except that Reason is like, it doesn't matter how many jobs I offer her. It's hard because there's nothing. If she wants to live an independent lifestyle, I guess, of them, it doesn't feel like there's, like, if it's only Reason offering her jobs that have to do with, in like, with dealings with them and she doesn't want anything to do with them. I don't know. Hasn't it also only just been, like, months? Like, her dad just died. Like, we're kind of getting into, obviously, you know, I think probably if you've been listening this far, you know that The Silver Flames is the next book and it explores more of Nesta's character. So maybe we're like getting, you know, from this book alone, you're just like, what is her problem? So yeah.
Yeah. No, you're right. Cause it's like, he was like, you can be our human emissary or whatever. I'm like,
I guess he says in the book, this book, he's like, I've offered her so many jobs and it doesn't matter. Like, she won't listen. And I think he says that in this book.
But then why doesn't, kind of like, I feel like this has happened, I can't think of an example, but it's like, then why not get the fucking baker down the street to offer a job next time she's in the shop or whatever? Or why doesn't she, like, clear tables at one of the pubs and Reese just whispers in their ear to offer them a job so it doesn't sound like it came from them? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's a lot of, about it, but... Yeah, it's obviously, she's just, like, does not want to be there. And then Feyre's like, yeah, I'll pay your rent if you come. And then there's also this moment where, like, Feyre talks to Amryn.
Yeah.
Which is actually a moment that I really liked because just exploring nuance of difference of friendships and relationships where she's kind of shocked because Amryn's like, yeah, Nesta comes by, like, once a week at least. And Feyre's like, what? Like, she doesn't talk to anybody. We don't know anything about how she's doing. And Amryn's like, I'm not gonna gossip about her. Like, I don't care that she's your sister. I don't care that you're, like, freaking out about it. Like, give her time. She's, like, months are inconsequential to, like, people who are going to live thousands of years.
Yes, that's another thing that, like, hinges on this plot because they're so upset that Nesta's not doing well. And it's like, babes, it's been mere months, and you will live forever. And they talk about this all the time about how, like, it took Feyre months to get well after the Under the Mountain stuff. She still gets nervous in tight underground spaces. We saw that in Akawar. So it's like, I think it goes two ways. Like, yeah, Nesta can't really be asking for money if she wants nothing to do with these people. But then it's also like they can't ask her to all of a sudden just like slap on a happy face. If this was like years down the road, like, sure. But it's like, it's been months.
Cassian even references being like, you know, it took me months. He goes, hell, years after the first war that I've been through to like figure out my shit. And so I'm just like, why is everyone freaking out about this? Like, let her, okay, she doesn't want to come to Christmas. Haven't we all had family problems where someone's estranged for a year? Like, let her go.
100%. And, like, two things. Yes, Christmas, it would be so annoying to see people that are generally well. Like, obviously, they're still dealing with some of the consequences from the war. Feyre and Elaine don't even seem shook by their dying because, again, they have hundreds of years on these girlies. They have better coping strategies, or they can just see more long... They see the big picture. They see more long term. And they're like, we'll get over this. We'll get over the Highburn stuff. And then the second thing is that how many times did Feyre refuse Reese's help? That was like the first third of Akamath. So it's just so frustrating that Nesta refuses their help, like, over 2 months. And they're like, she's hopeless and should just die in the Sidra.
I know. We're getting into it, but, like, justice for Nesta. Sorry. I'm like, okay.
Anyways.
I want to talk about the gift.
Yes. There's one moment, and then we'll get to Winter Soldiers, just that Feyre sees a tapestry in one of the shops when she's out shopping for the sixth time. And she's, like, talking to the creator of the tapestry, and she's like, oh, my God, you used art to heal because it was, like, black, and then there was, like, silver in it or whatever. And then she's like, know what? I can do the same. I can use art to heal myself and other people, so I'm going to open that gallery into a studio.
It's so cheesy, that entire conversation. It's like, I've made thread because my husband didn't come back, so I learned, and I called it the void. What about this thread? Well, after I was finished doing the void,
stop, I want to jump off a bridge.
I learned for hope, and it's like capitalized hope. I call this thread hope. I was puking it off the side of my bed while I was reading this. I cannot. That part was like, that, all that healing stuff was super cheesy, super sick.
Super cheesy. It also was so unnecessary because I was like, we've seen Feyre use painting multiple times to heal herself in the cabin, post mate situation, in Spring Court, at home on the fucking dresser. Like, why did she have to hear it for the sixth time from this random chick? It pisses me off so much. She knows this. She's been using art to cope for years, but she had to hear from this weaver about it. It's so frustrating.
That's really funny. That's really funny. Yeah, yeah. Maybe it's just frustrating because it's like the same storyline over and over and over again. And I'm like, okay.
Anyways, it's winter solstice.
Yeah.
And that means it's her birthday, so happy birthday, Feyre, darling. Rhys wakes her up in the a.m., and he gives her three gifts. One is a sketchbook with charcoal. It has her initials on it. One is a scarf because she's been stealing, I think, Moors. And then a satchel to carry her art supplies with her initials and the Night Court insignia on it. Which I was like LOLing because it was like, remember when Tamlin got you the basically the satchel with paints? And that led to bad times. But
yikes, I forgot about that. Yeah. Yeah. My ex got me something like this before.
But they had been joking about how he would be a good nude model for her painting. And so she's finally like, you know what? It's time. I'm going to draw you nude.
No, it's really cute scene. Like, it's really cute scene in her birthday. And so she's like, I don't want it to be my birthday. I don't want anybody to like worry about it. And then, yeah, he gets her all these thoughtful presents because he's like, yeah, I just like, you know, I just like don't want jewels and gems and stuff. And like, we already have 10 million of those. So like, whenever you want them, I'll get you these. And yeah, I can also just see the sitcom scene in my head where she's like, oh, and didn't I say naked? You'd be a good naked model? And like close the door, like laugh track.
It's so funny.
Cut to the notebook is sitting somewhere. Cassian's like four bottles of wine deep and he's like, what's this? He's looking at it. Reese, didn't know you're so well over there. Like, I love it. I love it.
I love it so much. So she like shuts the blinds at one point and she's like, you'll forgive me if I don't feel like sharing the glory that is you with anyone else. And then Rhys says, it's been a while since we had paints involved.
I love couples having their own inside throwbacks to their own inside jokes.
It was so funny. But after some sexy times and some drawing, Rhys is whisked away to the cabin for an unknown solstice tradition between Asriel, Cassian, and him that we don't know what was it about. Do you remember reading this for the first time? Did you have any idea of what it was going to be?
No. And they're like, don't worry, we'll take care of him. Ha ha ha. If he can keep up. And it's just all the things where I probably read it and was like, I think I can have sex finally.
No, literally.
Funny, it sounds like it. But of course, no, I just probably was just like, okay. And there's this really weird, like, boys will be boys kind of thing between her more. It's really weirdly gendered of like the boys have this bachelor party kind of tradition. I don't know. It was funny.
Yeah, I kind of pictured in my head before this like a hunt. and then like a getting drunk or something like that. So like, I guess that's kind of the same, but this is obviously way cuter. Would you be annoyed if every single time it's your birthday, your partner gets whisked away for half the day or like the full day to hang out with his buddies?
I'm going to reference such a specific moment, and anybody who loves pop culture and keeps up with reality TV, because I'm going through, sorry for this sidebar, my first watch of Vanderpump Rules.
Oh my God.
Tom telling Ariana that he wants to go play with like
dump trucks
while she's crying on her birthday, and she's like, it would just be really important for me for you to be with me on my birthday, and he's like, but babe, my guy friends have invited me to Vegas to like drive around in construction trucks. That is just what made me That's think this. Of That's every this. Of every time I would be it's giving Tom and Ariana season 4. It's,
yeah, and we know how that turned out. That is so fucking funny, but it's true. Like, I guess, again, it's like, if you're immortal, like, what is an afternoon or whatever? But, like,
she doesn't care. It's her birthday. She's just like, I don't know, like, other girls, I don't want attention on my birthday. That's fine. You go do your thing. And then it's really funny because, yeah, it's this mystery. What are they doing? Don't worry, we'll have him back. And he's like, she's like, what are you doing down the bond? And he's like, don't worry about it. Again, giving every fan fiction writer fodder for the years to come of Cassie and Asriel and recent. And then more comes, and she's just like, oh, those idiots didn't tell you what they were doing. And she winnows them to the cabin. And what does she find?
A snowball fight. it's so funny. It's so fun. I feel like kicking my feet, smiling ear to ear. Just because, again, like, cheesy 100, but really fucking cute. And, like, just, again, I could see the TV, like you're saying, like, the TV scene already playing out in my head.
Yeah, and, yeah, they've got, like, fort built up, and they're, like, not allowed to use magic, and they're not allowed to use their wings, and it's just, like, you just, like, Asriel pops up and throws, and then you hear Reese and be like, God damn it! And it's like they like hit each other, and like it still doesn't explain how you're supposed to win. Because I think they jokingly are like, yeah, how are you win? And Moore's like, I don't know, the first one who doesn't get frostbite or like who can last the longest. And then they're in the cabin, so they encroach. It's obviously not a boys only time because the girls are just like, yeah, we'll just hang out at the cabin until they're done. And like, they don't have a reaction or anything, but let us talk about the virgin.
Oh my God. So after, the tradition is that they go take a nude steam in the virgin, which is a
sauna?
Like a wood sauna that's attached to the house, which we have never heard of, even though we've been in this fucking cabin for 4 books.
Yeah, why wouldn't there be sauna sex between Feyre and Recent up until that point? Plot hole.
Or just like not even sex, but just like after the war or like after a training day at the camp, like them just relaxing in the sauna.
The only reason that we are so offended by this is because you and I are spa girlies, and so it's so important to us. If they're like, you have a sauna, we would have been there every day. It's like nobody else cares about this, but we're like, how dare they have never mentioned the sauna before?
No, literally no one else cares, but how have they not mentioned it? And then this is like so funny, but also just like, I would be annoyed because I think Feyre down her bond starts sending pictures because they're in the cabin, starts sending pictures to Reese about them hooking up in the cabin, and then he like gets a boner and gets kicked out of the Birchin.
But first, I know it's literally so unhinged and so funny, but first he hints at being like, there's room for one more, all naked in here, there's one room for one more, which is like not the first time that he's hinted at like them having like thruple sex or like more than one person, like another person involved in their sex life. And she's just like, bleh, like, what are you talking about? Like, get over yourself. And he's like, I don't know, I just always want to see what makes you interested, Feyre darling. And then she starts sending him like pictures of being like, I recall that you said that you would take me up against the wall. And he's like, maybe you shouldn't send these to me because like it's really not good form for me to get a boner while I'm in here. And she just like keeps doing it until, yeah, he like, I heard sounds of somebody getting kicked out. And Moore's like, did you kick him out? She's like, yeah. And they're like, boys are so stupid.
Which like is funny, but I'm like, if you're hanging out with your guy friends, like, it, I don't know. I'm just like, girl, fucking lock it up. Also, it's like, she's so basic.
All they have to do is send pictures of each other's tongues to each other, and they're just like so hot and heavy for it.
No, there's another point in this book where I think it's when Reese sees Feyre in a dress on Winter Solstice, and she's wearing a dress, and then she's wearing these diamond cuffs. And at another point, they had had sex, and she was just wearing the diamond cuffs. And so Reese sees Feyre in this dress, and Amarin goes, "Rain in that scent of yours, boy."
Thing. Like he like, because of course everybody can smell horniness, and yeah, he is literally like having a full ass fantasy in his mind. Do you know how annoying that would be? Thank God we can't smell pheromones on each other in real human life.
No, seriously, but I feel like they use it so wishy-washy because there's so many times where they could have said that and then they didn't note the scent, but then there's so many times where they use it as like a plot point. I don't know. It kind of annoys me, but it is, I think, like a fae trope or whatever, like scenting. So, or like a fae characteristic.
Yeah. He's really, he's like, oops, sorry. Like and we've got a little bit like, nobody, like, does anybody even remember who Varian is? But if you're paying attention and you're following along, Amarin is like bringing home a boyfriend for the first time. And so Varian, her summer court boyfriend, print boyfriend, is like over visiting the family for the winter solstice the first year. It's really funny.
This is what I don't get also, is like, he's a prince in summer court, so what is the like structure, what's the hierarchy? Because he's not high lord, so is he Tarquin's, like, because remember the king of Highburn had the prince and princess.
I think it's just different systems. Like it's hard because the Night Court doesn't have what you would call prince and princess, king or queen. Yeah. But I think that maybe there's other like systems in different courts where they're like, you know, politically there's like the High Lord, although I guess no one ever talks about being voted in. And then there's also, you know what, fucking beats me. But there are princes and princesses and extra in the shit. Summer court. Except no king, except no high king.
That's
nobody.
What I mean.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make sense to me.
Here for the vibes, not for the plot.
Here for the vibes. While all of this is happening, Lucien does visit Feyre, and this is when he mentions that he's living with Jurien and Vasa as the Band of Exiles. And Feyre is, like, mad about this, and I was like, give this boy a break, because he explains, he's like, I was exiled out of Spring Court. I was disowned by my family in Autumn Court and like kind of fucking exiled from my and like rejected from my mate. So just kind of let me have this one. But he brings gifts to Elaine and Feyre and then leaves. But later that night, Reese surprises Feyre with a birthday cake for her 21st birthday. And it's before dinner. They can eat cake before dinner because they make the rules. They eat dinner. We get that moment from Azrael being like, wait until everyone's seated before eating. Feyre just keeps looking at the clock because she is waiting for Nesta to arrive, but Nesta's nowhere to be found. So after dinner, they start opening their gifts and she arrives and she is like fucking silent the whole night. She walks in, she like gets a drink, is offered a seat by the fire, totally like clams up and doesn't say anything. And literally sits like a statue the entire night.
We all know this person at the family dinner. Like the
Why is it me though? I don't even know what to say. But like when I'm mad, this is me. I felt so bad for her because I've just been in this position where she like literally cannot verbalize anything that's going on with her, and she's taking a personal offense that everyone is having a good time and she's not, and that no one seems to care that she's not having a good time. But I'm like, also guys, what do you fucking expect from her? No one even gave her gifts except for Elaine.
I know. It's sad.
Everyone's giving each other gifts. Feyre gets like fucking 30 gifts from everybody. And no one got her. Like, Elaine gets Nesta some romance novels. That's it. And it's like so awkward. But then also Nesta doesn't even say happy birthday. Like, goes, oh, yeah, I forgot. I guess it's your birthday. So it's like, it's all bad. It's all bad. It's just a sticky bad situation. Bad vibes.
Yeah, bad vibes. That's funny. I was thinking about, you were talking about like that. Why is it me in the corner when I'm like, everybody else is having a good time and like nobody knows that I'm having a bad time? And I'm also just like, why every like large family function do I regress to my sullen teenager ways where I just want to be too. on my phone in the corner, basically being Nesta. Yeah, she shows up and then it's like sad. And then there's like this pointed tension where like Cassian looks at her, but they don't say anything. And there's a lot of mentions of the fact that they haven't talked or said anything since the war, since they had some like more intense moments together. So that's kind of going on. Because we also get Rhys's like first person perspective point of view in chapters of this book. And he seems to have some thoughts every once in a while about Cassian and maybe Nesta, but then being like, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to work out or if anything's going to happen. And then she leaves and Feyre gives her like a check for 3 months worth of rent. And Nesta is, and Feyre's like praying she doesn't take it. And Nesta's like,
yeah, and bye. And she thinks she's going to, like, rip it up and be like, sorry, I'll be your human emissary and, like, we'll get through this. But I'm like, okay, like, that was false hope. It's like that – Nesta's that meme where it's like – I forget what the setup is, but it's like something happened to me. I guess I'm going to, like, ruin the family dinner or whatever. Like, I'm about to make, like, this.
The drama. Like, the vibes. I will be the drama.
Yeah.
Cause some family drama. That's really funny.
Yeah. Let's talk about the gifts. Feyre gets an illuminated manuscript from Amryn, rare paint from Azriel, a blade sheath from Cassian.
Classic.
Slippers from Mor. Monogrammed paintbrushes from Elaine and liquor from Lucien.
It's funny, Mor being a terrible gift giver, and everybody, like, there's at one point they're like, yeah, you gotta be careful, look out for Mor's gifts, which are, and then it's like, yeah, Cassian's got like a drawer full of ruffled silk shirts from her, and I think it's really funny to not think that she's a bad gift giver because she always like looks really good and she's always fashionable and stuff. But actually, she's just like, I'm just gonna fuck with these fools and get them a stupid gift every year. So much better. Yeah, that's like, I like feel that. I think that Mor would be Mor like that.
I love that. Rhys gets a painting from Feyre. It's her true self in the Ouroboros. So that one that she painted in the abandoned gallery, she gives it to Rhys.
But she also, without, like, they're like, so it's really funny because when Feyre gives her gifts, they're like, she got this thing for Elaine and she got this thing for Amryn. And then she painted paintings for the people she really cares about. Like, it was
literally, that's so fucking true. She get like purchases things for everyone. And then it's like, but my real friends, I'll paint something for. That's so fucking funny.
And they're all talking after being like, so how do we get lower on the friend tier list so that we don't receive a bad painting from Feyre? Would rather just take the necklace that I can return if I need to. Like, that's just also a funny sitcom thing. But they don't say what her gifts are to, like, Cassian, Azriel, and Mor, but that they just, like, look at them. And then Cassian, like, peeks at the one that she gives Rhys, and he's like, is that your guy's new pet? Or he, like, makes some funny, weird comment that I'm just like, does it not lend itself to thinking that Feyre is a good painter?
I know, 100%, because he's like, what is this? It's like, you would know it's the Ouroboros, whatever. If I have to say that word one more time, I will end this podcast. Like, it's so brutal. Mor receives a red negligee from Cassian, and then, yeah, the painting from Feyre. Azriel receives monogram towels from Mor, the painting from Feyre, and medication for headaches from Elaine.
I know, and Elaine didn't get anybody anything. She's like, oh, that's from me. And, like, I, like, because you are always rubbing your temples at all the idiots here. And so I got it.
Oh, my God. That's a really good point, because Elaine only gets something for Nesta and Feyre. And Asriel.
Yeah. And
interesante.
And then Asriel, like, throws his head back laughing, which you, like, never get. And he's, like, he's chuffed. And everyone's, like, giving side eye or whatever. And I thought that the negligee lingerie for Moore was so funny because she opens it up and Asriel's like, does a double take. And he's like, wait, what the hell, Cassian? And Moore's like, no, don't worry. I just knew he's a bad gift giver, which is funny because everyone thinks she's a bad gift giver. And he's like, I just told him exactly what to get me. And he did it like a good boy. And it was just like, that's really funny. And then she gets him a matching set of boxers.
Yeah, which is so funny. Like, I love that she told him that. And then she got him the matching silk underwear. Like, that's fucking funny. I love this.
Cassian's, there's something so fun about his friendships with the girls in the group that I think is, like, so... Yeah, it's like that golden retriever energy. I've seen a lot of him compared to that, but it's really funny. Like, him drinking wine with Feyre and joking around, and then him obviously having this camaraderie with Moore, even though things have been complicated, and then he, like... He calls Reese and Reese. Like, he's obviously just like
a big, love him.
Lovable, huggable bear of the group.
So Amarin gets a coat and some other things from Varian before Solstice happens. She gets pearl and diamond earrings from Asriel, a puzzle carrier and brooch from Feyre, and jewelry from Reese. Her puzzle thing is funny.
Oh, yeah, there's another, yeah, that's also another, like, funny little scene where you walk in and you're like, what are you doing? And Amarin's just got puzzles across the floor of her apartment.
And Feyre's like, how many pieces? And she's like, 5,000.
They're not hard enough for me. Yeah, so, yeah, there's, like, that's cute.
Elaine gets a cloak from Feyre and gardening gloves from Lucien. And then Nuala and Caridwen. Gets blankets from Elaine and a big fat bonus check from Reese.
What gift do you want the most of all of these? If only you can see Tori's face.
None of the gifts were like that good, to be honest. Like, honestly, the monogram towels, I know that was supposed to be a joke to Asriel, but like, I love me some like you good would, plush towels.
You would love that. I want the
puzzle carrier.
I do not want the puzzle carrier. No, I want the really expensive liquor bottles that Lucien leaves with a note that just says you're going to need this.
Yes, or the pearl and diamond earrings sound good too.
Yeah, I'm not going to say no to the pearl and diamonds, actually, or the bonus check. Or the bonus check from recent. I wouldn't mind some totally. Like, cute. Like, Nesta got a good deal with, like, her, like, lovely set of romance novels.
That's also a good gift. Yeah, absolutely. But, like, don't want the painting. Don't want the gardening gloves. Like, it's so funny. But this is, like, where it gets fucking spicy. This is the only good part of this book, like, truly. Nesta goes to leave. Feyre says, you know, you came. Here's your rent check. And again, she's hoping she rips it up, but she doesn't. And Cassian's like, just wait. I'm going to walk you home. And she's like, you really don't need to. And he's like, no. Like, I insist. Like, I'll walk you home. And they just basically get into, like, a blowout of an argument because all of the stuff has been just bottled up. And it's finally coming out on Christmas. Classic.
I know we keep calling it Christmas, but it's Solstice. But it's basically, mm-hmm. That's what it's a stand-in for. Yeah, big enemies, very reminiscent of, like, well, it is a different flavor than Rescend and Feyre, but we talked about this in the Aquar episode of just, like, I'm over, like, everything's resolved with Feyre and Rescend, and so there's not the same tension. And so all my interest is, like, on what's going on with Cassian and Nesta. And, yeah, he basically is, she is like, leave me the alone. And he is like, no, I'm going to come. And then big blowout, big summer blowout. And he tries to give her a gift that he had because he's like, I had this gift that I wanted to give Nesta and it took me so long to find it. And I didn't want to give it in front of the others because we hadn't really talked. And he tries to give it to her, right? Does he try to give it to her? Does she not know?
Yeah, he pulls it out of his like pocket or coat or whatever. And it's in his hand. And she goes, what's that? And he goes, well, it's, you know, my gift for you. And she's like, No, like absolutely not. Because he says, like, basically, like, my Christmas wish, which my fucking grandma does this every year. He goes, my Christmas wish is that you'll be closer with your sisters next year, because I can see how much it hurts Feyre and Elaine. And she's like, no, I don't want your fucking gift. I don't want your advice. I don't want your friendship. I don't want to hear this. So she leaves. He throws the gift in the Sidra. We have no idea to this day what it is. She's like marching up to her house and she's like, I know that he is flying over me, watching that I get home safe, and that he like lands on a rooftop across from her apartment and like waits till she gets into her apartment. And she is just like disassociating. We also learn that her apartment's like freezing cold because she can't have the fire on because it reminds her of her dad's neck snapping. Like the fire crackles are triggering her. And so she is just like fucking unwell.
Yeah, she's severely unwell. And I'm like living, and I hate it. And I'm living for every moment of this like tension between them. And like,
what's me what? Too. It's so good. The buildup is so good. It's funny. I was like kind of like meh on this series. And then I'm like hook, line, and sinker back in for Nessian.
Yeah. Which I think happens to everybody.
Yeah. It sounds like that online. But I'd be curious to hear if that isn't the case for some people. So to wrap us up, Rhys whisks Feyre away to the cabin for some alone time. And Feyre asks Rhys if he would change her tattoo, her eye tattoo on her hand, to the Night Court logo to match the ones on his knee. She's like, by the way, I have another gift for you. I literally can't do this.
No. And I was like, what is going on? They are like having mind-altering universe jumping sex, like what? Yeah, what was happening?
Yeah, like they talk about like having sex while flying at one point,
right? That's
like
part of my gripes and grumbles, excuse me, but keep going.
Yeah, and then yeah, I guess just because they can use the bond to show each other things different, like POVs or whatever, so that's happening. And she's like, I have one more gift for you, which she like didn't even really give him a gift because she gave a homemade painting. And I say this all the time. I would rather get a gift from the mall than a gift from the heart. And through the bond, she shares the image of her son that the bone carver showed Cassian and her. And she's like, I'm ready to conceive a child with you. Baby, that's not a gift. It literally kills me again. That's not a gift. Like, Kay, I don't know. I was so annoyed at this.
I just can't do the pregnancy, like, trope, like, whole thing. And for me, like, if people want that happily ever after in that way, that's great. But like,
why is it always a mediamente after they get together? Like, they haven't even. So what does this mark, like, about a year that they've been together? Like, I'm just like, and they do. I think at one point she says, like, yeah, I want kids, but, like, down the line, because I want us just to be together. And then all of a sudden she's like, nope, like, I'm good to get pregnant now. You just had your 21st birthday. Like, you have your whole life to get pregnant, your whole immortal life. Like, it's just so annoying to me.
Yeah, the timeline, that, like, it only makes sense for
I wish we did, like, a 10-year jump or something like that, because, like, obviously, I want them to have a kid and yeah, stuff like that, because that's what they want and they need an heir to the Night Court and like all of that stuff. But like, it seems so soon.
Yeah, that's a great and grumble for sure.
And Rhys one-ups her one more time because he takes her the next day and gives her a lot of land and is like, we're going to build our dream estate here because the townhouse is just too tight. There's like a few minor deets at the end where Rhys goes to Tamlin and like offers kind of an apology. And then Mor goes to this private estate that she owns and she like senses something in the forest that is unknown to us. And then Rhys sees the female Illyrians training. So that issue was resolved. And Racina and Feyre open the studio and host children's art classes.
So I had no memory of the Moor chapter, whatsoever in all of my rereads and stuff. I had no memory of the Moor chapter, and then we don't really have a lot more about Moor in the future, and so I am just like, oh, what is going on with this? And also, she has a private estate that she's like never told.
She's had for 300 years and never told her BFFs.
And it's just like I don't understand. Yeah, a lot of them have like a lot of secrets from one another. There's a lot of like, and we could never talk about that, or we've never told that, or Asriel's never told us that or something. And I am just like, are you guys doing friendship wrong?
Yeah, how good of friends are you? You're not even out to your friends. And I know that there's a million reasons why people choose to not come out, but it's like, yeah, you're totally right. You have like all of these secrets.
Not just her, like all of them from each other. And I'm just I'm like, I don't know, do better. Get with the 21st century. You guys are supposed to be like the court that does things differently, and you're casual and you care about each other and you don't know shit about each other. Okay.
That's such a good point. Okay, let's get into our roundtable discussion. Our internet investigation. This is our cursory peruse of the internet of things you need to know. I saw this and I repeated this to you, and then I can't find any other information about it on the internet. Allegedly, this was supposed to be a full-fledged book, but Sarah J. Maas's dad became ill and she probably had, you know, a deal with her publishing house or whatever and had to publish something shorter. But then I also have read that, like, it's like the first three ACOTAR books are a trilogy, and this is a bridge book because we're changing POVs in Silver Flames. And so much is set up in Silver Flames that we won't spoil in this book. So kind of conflicting information there.
No, I haven't heard anything about that. So I'm just like, yeah, those things check out.
As much as I am annoyed by this book, just at the repetition, which again, we've said this in other ACOTAR books, like, I just think she needs a more stringent editor. Because again, I had a good time reading it, and I think it's so smart. Instead of just, like, it makes it so much easier having this novella and then changing POVs than trying to do it well just in a full novel for Silver Flame. So like, I think this is actually really, really smart, but she just needs a better editor. They need to cut. And people probably say that about this podcast.
That's so funny.
That we circle the drain and could use a stringent editor. And to that I say, touche. Like, that is so fair.
Pay us the money that she's getting, and then you can get an editor.
Absolutely. So our Wonder Whys, these are our unanswered questions for the listeners. We've talked about this a little bit, but like, why does Rhys act so high and mighty and that Velaris is perfect? Which again, like, I want to live there. I do think it's perfect. But then they're talking so much shit about these seedy pubs and these slums and stuff like that. It's just like fucking weird.
My Wonder Why is like, my only like big that I got excited about reading, because I felt like it was a new plot point that I hadn't read yet in the entire series because I forgot about this book, is like, what is the darkness in the forest that Moore sees? And yes. it's just like, I'm just going to leave that alone. And what's that? That's my Wonder Why.
Actually, we got a listener question about that. So let's just add that in now. At Piper's Mom 25 says, was that Bryaxis at Moore's estate? Love his horse girl transformation. Which, like, I was LOLing. Do we think it's Bryaxis? I did a little more half-assed internet research, and like, people are saying it could be Bryaxis. People said maybe, and again, correct me on my pronunciation, but Koshe.
Oh.
Who is like an immortal god that crops up in the later books. But she didn't seem, again, correct me if I'm wrong because I read this last week, she didn't seem like disturbed.
No, she was like, I'm just going to leave it. There's lots of bad things in the forest. Like, I'm just not going to worry about it. No, I think it's something else that I mean, SJM is good at like leaving little plot points that you don't think will come together, especially around like different creatures or darkness. So There could be anything, but I feel like we're waiting for a big wow moment about Moore and her story, and like things will come together because she is one of the like of the inner circle. We know, I would actually arguably say like the least about her, and like what her power is, this like power of truth, all of this hinting that Eris did at like there's something more about what happened in that, in the forest that day. And we kind of know the surface level stuff, and then she just like kind of had that bit of a lore dump about her being gay, lol. And then yeah, obviously we don't know a lot about Azrael, but I feel like there's just like a lot of characters because we've gotten such a deep dive on some of them, like we get on Nesta and Cassian in the next book, that I'm like, are there going to be like 10 books? Because I want my deep dive on each character. I'll take one for Elaine, even. I'll take one for Tamlin. But first, I need Azrael.
If you, of course, if you had to choose who the next book is about, who's the main POV, who would you want it to be?
Good question. I want to say Azrael because I want to know more about him, but only if it made sense. But I saw this like one fan theory that like, it's going to follow Elaine in the Spring Court, which is arguably like the least thing that I care about, but now I like want to know something that I wasn't expecting to know. But actually, sorry, it took me a few seconds to answer. You know this, I am a Lucian girly through and through. I was literally I love him. I would thrive. I don't think we're going to get it, but I would thrive for like more evolution point of view or like deep dive into what's going on with him. Or Eris, like, I'm, like, intrigued and interested of what's
really
going on at the Autumn
interested.
Court.
Yeah. For some reason, Eris is, like, really doing it for me in terms of intrigue. Because we even got a little bit in this book where when they went to Hewn City and Moore was, like, thinking about being left in the forest. And, like, we just got a little bit more information about that. So, like, I'm most interested or, like, curious about his story. But if I had to put money on it, I would say it's going to be Elaine because...
The sisters, yeah.
The Archeron sisters, I think that makes a lot of sense. But we don't know who Elaine is going to be with. Like, is it going to be Azrael? Is it going to be Lucian? Could it be this curveball with maybe a Tamlin Spring Court situ? I think, like, the most realistic is that it's Lucian, but she ends up living in Spring Court with him. But... Or maybe the most obvious is Azrael, but it's like, like I've said this before a million times, I'd be fucking so annoyed if the Archeron sisters just ended up with the Bat Boys. Like, that's just...
Knowing that she's going to wind up with Azrael and they're going to have babies and it's going to be like, that's it if we're just going by what freaking everything else is. So
my last wonder why is that, what gift did Cassian get for Nesta?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, our gripes and grumbles, these are nitpicky problems we have with the book. I just said it's nearly 300 pages, and for what? I think it could have been condensed down to a nice 150. We get it, Feyre, you don't want to spend money. We get it, Nesta's drinking herself away. And, like, we get it, Rhys and Feyre love each other. Like,
where are you? Tell me where the lie is.
Also, it's her 21st birthday, and that annoys me. Like, yeah. To no end.
Yeah, that's annoying. My gripes and grumble is, like, they're having sex in the sky.
Yeah.
How?
Sound shield, baby. That just changes shield? Everything. Yeah.
Sound shield? No, what about, like, your muscles and your body and how you're keeping up? And, I mean, she talked about them almost crashing into, like, rooftops and stuff. And I'm just like, you're flying.
A sound shield, and it must be also, like, a vision shield because...
Anyways, you're, like, zipping yourself out while you're flying as you're, like, trying to keep your balance. I just... Make it make sense. It's my gripe. It's my grumble. This stupid ass. Like, get a bed in one of your 10 houses.
They're clearly, like, exhibitionists.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're having sex during the war on everybody, and they're having sex here, and yeah. And
there's even a scene where they start having sex before Hewn City, and Moore's outside the door, and she's like, remember, we have to leave in 30 minutes. And they're like... It's so funny. I already told this to you on our emergency FaceTime last week, but it's annoying to me that the Bat Boys don't mention that they haven't been able to do the snowball winter solstice tradition for the last 50 years. Or would they have done it last year?
No, I think they don't talk about winter, or I can't remember. If there is a mention of winter solstice, it's like they don't obviously don't get to do a bunch of like celebrations because there's like war going on.
But just wait, okay, so I guess she's back at Spring Court after UTM when winter solstice happens.
Yeah, so it's possible that they've had one.
So maybe they've done it once since UTM happened, but like, so I guess maybe it doesn't have to be mentioned, but like it just, I think if there was just one sentence that was just like, it's also so special that we get to redo this because we haven't been able to do it for 50 years. It would just make so much more sense. It would put something
I know you hate
back
that.
Into context. I guess.
Know you hate it. It's so funny.
That's all my gripes and grumbles. Do you have any?
No, I thoroughly appreciated the, again, we've talked about this because depending on if you've reread the books or only read them once for some of our episodes, you've had different thoughts on the reread. And so like having reread this, it's just a lot of my like initial gripes and grumbles about it turned into like fun sitcom moments.
I know.
Get to enjoy it because I was soaking up moments after I've like settled with so much time with these characters, and then I'm like desperate
like
for other stuff.
Jarring.
Yeah, I guess it's so random.
I guess when you get books, because like this was published in
2018,
and then they didn't get Silver Flames till 2021. So I guess it's like it's not that jarring, but like I finished Akawar and then, you know, 5 days later started Frost and Starlight, and then
yeah,
the next day started Silver Flames, and it was just so jarring. But I guess like when you have 3-ish years in between, it's less.
No, it like doesn't jarring. Make no, it doesn't make sense whatsoever. This entire novel doesn't make sense for this series, for a fantasy series. It is the most random 200 and something pages of like published. I like why it wasn't a bonus thing like available on her website. Like bizarre
wild times. Wild. It kind of reminds me, just to bring it back to Twilight because we always have to do that, of the second short life of Bree Tanner. Like, yeah. Why the fuck did she publish that novella? Looks so randy.
Yeah, yeah. Why the fuck did Stephanie Meyer publish a lot of books? But I know. And codas and extra things. But yeah, that's really funny. Yeah, it's weird. I've read that people think that the next thing that's going to come out is actually like a more novella. Like people are thinking that before a big book comes out, that there actually might be another novella while she like takes time to write more in the actual series. Because, yeah, so I don't, so it'll be interesting.
I'd be happy with that little tidbit to keep us on our toes. I'm sure because it's blown up on TikTok, her publishing house is like, we got to get something out, whether that's like another coloring book or a novella or something. I'm sure they're just like, we got to feed this.
Well, and we got to feed that, but she's also like riding all of the success of like Crescent City series. And she just came out with like a book that's like the third book in that series, which is
February or March. Totally.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about our sequel scoop. This is the tea on any upcoming sequel seasons and the general reception. We just kind of gave some of the takes. I want to point out, though, when I was doing some research, the reception for this was lukewarm. People were just like, it's so different from your previous books. It's not what we kind of signed up for, which I think is fair. And the next book is A Court of Silver Flames.
Makes me so mad. Akosa. All the other ones have a vowel for me to work with.
It's so bad.
There's my gripes and grumbles. But yeah, let us know what your favorite gift was.
Yes. Tell us your favorite gift. Tell us if you liked the book. I'm so curious to see what other people's perspective is on this. And again, I feel like if I read it when they were coming out at the time, I would have been like, oh, I'm obsessed just to get a little crumb from this series. But yeah, reading them back to back is a hard sell, let me tell you.
Still better than Akawar. I'll take all of it.
yeah, much better.
Yeah.
Okay, Megan, thanks so much for going on. And that's the story of A Court of Frost and Starlight. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you to Megan for joining me on today's episode. I feel like I say this every week, but especially for a new podcast like Ready to Be Romance, it is so vital for listeners to subscribe and leave a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. So if you haven't already, please take a few minutes and write a review. If you don't know what to say, you can comment on maybe the book choice or the hosts or the discussion or why you think someone should tune in. I appreciate it so, so, so much. If you want to suggest a book for me to cover or leave a voicemail question or comment, you can do so via the links in the episode show notes. I feel like I say this to my friends all the time that they're so sick of me, but I don't think I've said it really on the podcast. So I just want to say this podcast is really, really, really filling my creative bucket. It has been, you know, kind of a dream of mine to start this podcast, the second podcast of mine, over the last year or two. And to see it come to fruition has just been so thrilling for me. So thank you so much for tuning in. I really appreciate it. Our next episode is The Fine Print. Until then, happy reading. For Ready to Be Romanced, I'm Tori. Goodbye.